You are listening to Screenfish Radio. I'm your host, Steve Norton. When times are tough, what stories do you turn to? Our new series, Comfort Films, is designed to look at the stories that are important to us and why they help bring us up when everything feels down. This week, TO Film Files' Jolie Featherstone and Screenfisher Julie Levac stop by to talk about the generational coming-of-age story in Garden State, Finding Friends in Lovesick, the impact of a personal epic in Cloud Atlas, and the beautiful chaos of Forrest Gump. So grab a coffee and get comfortable. This is Screenfish. Welcome back to Screenfish Radio. We are so thrilled that you can join us this week as we continue on our series on comfort films, as we talk about the films that bring you up when times are down. And this week we are thrilled to have back the dream team once again, Jolie Featherstone and Julie Levac. Welcome back, ladies.
Yay, thanks guys.
Thank you so much. I'm excited to be chatting with you guys.
Well, it's been nice. You guys got to have a party without me right before everything got shot to hell.
Well, you also got to go to Florida, so
that's true.
It's a bit of a trade-off.
That's true. I got to watch everything get shot to hell, actually. But, I mean, honestly, who knew when you girls were covering Onward that we would be at this place now? But
oh, my gosh. It seems like a lifetime ago at this point.
Yeah, and Onward was the last film that I saw in theaters, and I love going to the cinema. Like, the cinema is my happy place, so I think about that pretty often, and I wonder when the next time that, you know, we'll all be able to go to the cinemas and be able to go and actually feel safe while also feeling like we can just kind of immerse ourselves and enjoy the experience as opposed to kind of sitting there and being worried and whatnot. So,
right.
Onward was the last film I saw in theaters. So I cherish the memory.
Oh, that's sweet. Yeah, it's so strange. Like, I definitely miss going to the theater, even though I wasn't able to go as often as I would like. Mm-hmm. I really, really miss it. And that's the thing, like, even when they actually open, whenever that may be, how is the experience going to be? I don't think that we'll be able to sit close to different groups. And I think it's going to be awkward for a while. So that's too bad. I think the last one I saw in theaters was, it was Invisible Man. And we podcasted on that one as well. And that was when it was starting to get uncomfortable. Like, people were like, okay, I don't know, maybe there's not a lot of people here. Maybe people are like trying to stay home because of this whole COVID thing. It was very strange.
Yeah, oh my gosh, yeah.
I would love to hear, first of all, how you are doing. How are you holding up in the midst of all this?
You know what? It's been interesting because every day is so different. Even though every day sort of blends together and you don't remember what day it is, you know, I'm still fortunate enough to work full time from home. So there's working full time from home. There's homeschooling my daughter. And it's interesting. Some days I feel really optimistic and like I want to get outside, get some fresh air, go for a walk. I'm feeling productive. But then the next day can be the total opposite. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm feeling totally overwhelmed with balancing everything. And I've been finding it difficult to be kind of patient with myself and realize that it's, you know, next to impossible to balance it all. You know, I'm like, I'm home all the time now. Why can't I keep my house clean, for example? And so, you know, every day is different. And I'm learning how to be a little bit more compassionate with myself.
That's really important, you know, to extend that compassion to others, but especially also to show it to yourself as well. Especially during these times.
Yeah, it's funny how in the midst of all of this, the things that can really frustrate us, you're right. Like, I'm at home and I'm like, why can't I keep up with the cleaning? Oh, I should be able to do that. I should be able to manage this. I should be able to balance this. I should. And that's a very dangerous place to go, I find, because you end up putting so many more expectations on yourself in the midst of otherworldly circumstances that it can become very unhealthy to put that on yourself.
Yeah.
I hear you. And I understand. Jolie, how are you doing?
You know, I'm doing well. Thanks for asking. You know, kind of as Jewel said, I think that I've had good days and I've had bad days. And at the end of the day, it's just trying to take it as it comes. And one thing that I that's a challenge for me is, you know, just being online so much, which is part of the nature of my job, and then seeing everyone being like, oh, you know, you have all this extra time, you need to be more productive, and now's the time to work on, like, your you know, your personal projects and this and that. And when I'm reading all that, I was thinking, wait, what extra free time do you mean? You know, I mean, I'm also extremely, extremely privileged, as Jewel said, to be able to work from home. So I really have nothing to complain about. I can work safely at home and I have the means to do so. You know, I have access to internet and, you know, have everything that I need, so I can still work. Yeah, I think a lot of it was struggling with the obvious fears and anxieties and uncertainty due to the nature of the virus and everything that we're living through. And also this sort of weird added pressure to be extra productive and, you know, to take advantage of this opportunity, which I think is also a really weird thing to say, because it's not like we're just being given free time. We're doing this to you know, keep ourselves safe and alive during a pandemic. So I think being able to say, you know, okay, what did I do today that was good for myself? What did I do today that was good for my loved ones? What did I do today that was good for my community? And, you know, sometimes they're very, very small things. Sometimes they're more impactful. But either way, just trying to keep that perspective and do what I can to stay safe and keep those around me and my community safe, I'll try to do. So we've just been staying at home, staying inside, and yeah, trying to do what we can and check in on people. And when we have the means to do so, donating to organizations that we felt could, you know, could use maybe some support, you know, for communities that might need the extra help right now. So that's kind of what we've been doing and just taking it day by day.
I've shared this story before, but when this first started, my intent was, oh, I'm going to get all this stuff done. Maybe I'll start writing a book. I'm going to start a YouTube channel. I actually was like, you know, it's Greenfish. We need to get more stuff on, more of a presence on YouTube. So I'm going to start a YouTube show and all this stuff. And after about a week and a half of genuine planning, I realized I do not have the emotional or personal bandwidth to do all these things right now. And that's okay. But I feel like, you know, it's funny when you're working at home, I find that I talk a lot more about how busy I am, but it's not because, I mean, I am busy. I've been very, very busy. I find that it's almost to justify to people, don't worry, I'm actually doing something, which is so counterintuitive. You're absolutely right. We're in survival mode and that's the expectation. I mean, we have responsibilities. Like, you have a job, and, I mean, we put so much extra pressure on ourselves. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, there's this mentality, you know, living in the type of society that we do, that kind of leads you to believe that you're only valuable insofar as you are productive.
Yeah.
It's almost like your output is how you measure your value and your worth, which is, I don't think that's entirely accurate or healthy. So, you know, it's a lot of kind of unpacking that and kind of challenging that. And, you know, as you said, at the end of the day, we're all in survival mode. And if we can do something good to take care of ourselves and take care of those around us and for the wider community, like, in my eyes, that's a successful day.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm trying to just simplify. I'm someone who hates sort of overcomplicating things, or I hate when other people overcomplicate things, but then I find that I put those pressures on myself. So at home, I'm really trying to, you know, let's do one productive thing in the house, even if it's just emptying the dishwasher, or I want to make sure I'm reading, you know, a couple pages of a book a day, just little things here and there to keep myself sane. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And not be like, I have to clean the entire kitchen today. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. Do you ladies have any uniquely COVID stories you'd like to share? anything that has happened to you that is unique to the story of this pandemic?
I mean, I don't think that I have anything that's like fun or entertaining. I mean, the only thing that I can think of is when things were really on lockdown. I mean, now, at least in Toronto, we've got things moving a little bit, like a little bit more freedom. Things are starting to, we're in phase one of sort of reopening the city. When things were still pretty tight in lockdown, we went for a walk in the park, and we were just walking in the park. You know, we weren't sitting on a picnic bench or anything like that. But I have a daughter who is 6 years old, and there was a fallen tree, like just a big long log in the park. And so she wanted to run across it as we were walking by. So we stopped and we helped her on the log, and she was running across it. And then these two security guards approached us and told us, the park is closed. I'm like, oh shoot. So sorry. We thought parks were still open. Yeah, but you're just not allowed to stand around. So, and I totally get what they're doing, and I have mad respect for the people, especially because we've been having the Trinity Bellwoods Park issue recently for those that are in Toronto and are aware of what's going on. But at the time it was scary. You know, it was very weird. We had just stopped so that Lily could run across a log, and just that simple sort of innocent act was not allowed. And so that was very sobering. You know what I mean?
No, it's true. It's true. You're right. And it needs to be done. Like, that's, you're right. But it is surreal.
Yeah, it is a really surreal time. And you know, we live just a couple blocks over from Trinity Bellwoods, and I love to walk. Like, for me, walking is one of my core joys in life. It's sort of like meditation for me. And I've been working from home since March 12th, and working from home kind of encompassing everything, like staying at home and only going out, you know, when it's for essential reasons. And you know, the first couple weeks, I would still do my normal walk would consist of a few laps around Trinity Bellwoods, and then I'd go to some of like the surrounding smaller streets. And after the first couple weeks, I actually stopped going to Trinity Bellwoods at all. And I would just be doing my laps around. I would be maintaining distance. It wasn't like I was hanging around, but it just became very clear very early on that it was becoming a bit of a hot spot for people to just kind of hang around, and people weren't necessarily doing their best to keep distance. So after the first couple weeks, I thought, I'm just going to not go there anymore. So I've kind of adjusted my walking patterns to just focusing on kind of the smaller streets. And I discovered during my walks, the smaller park that I had always kind of walked by and thought, oh, you know, I should do a couple laps in there one day, and just never did. And I finally got around to doing that. And it's much, happy to say, it's much less populated than Trinity Bellwoods. So that's kind of nice. And yeah, it's got a nice big incline, so you can do a couple, I guess, laps up and down to really get the blood pumping, which is nice. So yeah, that's just kind of something, I guess, unique to our area. And I think something really positive that I've noticed, you know, in this time that is so full of, you know, for me anyways, that can be so full of anxiety, is noticing that in people's windows of their homes, or even just businesses, people have been putting signs in their windows, you know, saying, you know, or giving thanks to essential workers and to healthcare workers, to offer words of, you know, just optimism and hope for people walking by, which I think is wonderful. And I've been taking photos of the signs that I see, and I don't know what exactly I'm going to do with that, but it might just kind of be my little, photo album of this time, to remember some of the small but kind things that people have done. And I mean, I've also been really kind of intentionally taking more time to call different people or text, you know, just check in on family members that I don't get to really see as much. And certainly not right now, now that we're all staying at home, but which has been nice. It's allowed me to kind of converse with some relatives in a way that, you know, or in a more frequent way than we typically get to chat. So that's been kind of a positive thing. But yeah, it's there's certainly good days and certainly bad days. I don't know if any of my experiences are super unique. I'm sure everyone's kind of had similar experiences so far.
Well, I mean, one of the things that is true is we may have had similar circumstances and situations, but they're all unique to us. I like to check in with people a lot anyway. That's just what I like to do, but I'm doing it a lot more, whether it's via Zoom or whether it's via Messenger. I'm finding that that's the case too. So I do know, I do hear what you're saying.
Yeah, it's just kind of a nice thing, you know, even if it's just a text or, you know, or picking up the phone, which is great. Mm. It's just great to hear people's voices if you have the opportunity to do so. And everyone communicates differently. I know some people absolutely hate talking on the phone, which is cool too.
I was going to say, wait, your phone actually talks to people?
Right?
I didn't know it did that.
It's funny. Like, some people truly hate talking on the phone. And you know what? Fair enough. However you communicate is great. But yeah, just, I think it's just sort of, like you said, it's allowing me, in my experience, to kind of have different conversations with relatives that I might not normally get to have as often, which is nice, you know, for some relatives who don't live super far away, but far enough away that we don't, you know, life being so busy and the distance added to it, we don't get to see them as often. So it's nice being able to kind of call and chat with them.
Yeah, absolutely. I think my a COVID story for me this week is related actually to the unique experience of COVID film festivals. So it's been a lot of fun. I've been very, very blessed and lucky to be able to write for another site as well. So intheseats.ca, shout out to Dave, has given me the chance to help them out and write for them when I get a chance. And so I guess there's two film festivals this weekend in Toronto, which is the Toronto Jewish Film Festival and Hot Docs, both of which are kind of a big deal. So it has been really interesting. I mean, I've gotten screeners lots of times before and all this stuff, but the very concept that the film festivals this year are taking place primarily over the internet is fascinating to me. It is because the thing about film festivals that I've seen at TIFF over the years is it's such a communal experience. It is. I love the lineups for the films almost as much as I love the films, because you end up talking with people that you're brought together based on a love of film, and you end up talking to people just about things they like, why they like it. You get basic information. Sometimes you don't even get a name, but you end up talking for 3 hours because you're in this situation together. And you have, like, honestly, it is so life-giving to me. And it sounds crazy that I would say that about standing in a lineup, but it really is. I really love that.
I'm with you on that. I've had, you know, so many wonderful and lovely experiences standing in the lines at TIFF. I actually, you know, became good friends with a girl that I met years and years ago at TIFF, and she ended up writing an article about it in the publication that she wrote for. She wrote about the experience of us meeting in line and kind of becoming friends from that, and about how a big part of the film festival is this sort of community experience and having the opportunity to meet people who are passionate about films and are interested in, you know, perhaps in similar topics. That's a huge part of the film festival. And I'm super curious to see how larger festivals, you know, like Hot Docs and the Jewish Film Festival and TIFF, of course, in the fall, how they're going to adapt in light of everything.
Yeah.
Yeah, I found myself kind of sad this week thinking about the possibility of TIFF not being physical, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
If that's the right term to use, like a physical film festival. And you know, Steve and I were chatting and he was mentioning how it is probably just going to be a digital platform, but it is such a an experience going to a film fest, physically going to a film festival, that it's a little bit sad to think about that not happening this year. Or who knows, maybe it'll affect film festivals for years to come. But that's interesting. You were mentioning about meeting a good friend. I mean, that's how we met. It wasn't at a film festival, but it was at a movie premiere, and that's how we met you. And I mean, it's just such a special venue. to meet yeah. people. And I really appreciate you and our friendship. And so, I wonder how that will play out in a more digital format.
Yeah. You just made me so happy. Oh my gosh. You guys are going to make me tear up. I 100% agree. Oh my gosh. I look back to that night. It was the Hellboy red Hellboy. Carpet with so yes. much fondness because, first of all, you know, the experience was fantastic and Sean was there. He was my photographer that night. So we were kind of teaming up and getting, I've told so many people in my life, I consider myself so fortunate that I got to be placed beside you two and to meet you and to be next to such wonderful people and that we can continue this friendship and we continue our conversations because I love our conversations.
Oh, yes, me yeah. too.
Yeah.
It was amazing. I look back on it fondly.
Yeah.
Me too. I'm so glad that I met you both.
Yeah. And you see, those are the sorts of things that I feel like I'm going to miss. But I mean, it's going to be something different. I mean, yeah. TIFF is the largest public film festival in the world. So the key word there isn't largest, it's public. Yeah. So they simply can't do it the same way. Like, they just can't. So it's been interesting the last, just this week, sort of feeling like I'm getting a bit of a taste for it. And even the Hot Docs website says, you know, if you want to screen this film, buy a ticket and then screen it. Like, you pay for the film and then download it like you would if you were on iTunes. I hope that that's not a permanent thing. I really do. I have a lot of faith in TIFF because even right now they're crushing it with their online interviews and stay-at-home film festival. Has just been fantastic.
I was going to ask, have you been watching their stay-at-home cinema nights?
I've seen a couple of them. I've been more keeping up with them. But, I mean, they had Rian Johnson. They had Kate Winslet. Like, they've had so many people. Ethan Hawke, Gina Davis, League of Their Own. Like, this is just, like, it's brilliant. They've done a killer job.
The programming is incredible. I think there's one tonight with Tantu Cardinal. Like, they've... Oh my gosh, the interviewees that they've secured are fantastic.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it makes sense because really all they have to do is sit in their living room for half an hour. You know, it's, yeah. I mean, I'm sure, again, it's still a slot of time they have to commit, but they don't have to fly anywhere. They don't have to sit down. There's not 3 days of planning. It's do your hair and sit in a chair. You know, that's kind of what it is.
I think that's one thing to be said, actually. I'm so glad that you brought this topic up about this time, is that, you know, we're really starting to see how, you know, events, you know, whether they be festivals or conferences or even something like fitness classes, you know, how they can be made to be more accessible for people. I think that's something that, I mean... It's a learning that I think could, you know, hopefully move forward, is the importance of making things accessible for people, you know, being able to offer programming. And I'm certainly not suggesting that TIFF cancel its, you know, its kind of historical physical program. I think they should absolutely still continue to do that. I think they should strive to make the physical experience as accessible as possible for people. But also, if they can, you know, maybe there is a certain, you know, section of the festival that is online or what have you, to make it accessible for those who may not be able to easily get there in person too. So I think there are a lot of learnings coming out of this as well. I mean, I've certainly enjoyed, I've watched online concerts. I've also tuned in for the TIFF Stay at Home Cinema Nights. I've joined a lot of kind of like these sort of random workshops on different things, different topics that I just thought might be interesting. And although I myself, you know, am mobile and able to be mobile and have the privilege of being able to get places I need to when it's safe to do so again, there's a lot of folks out there who may, you know, continue to benefit from having this kind of programming online as well, which would be great if we can kind of continue that as well.
Yeah, the accessibility, that's an interesting way to phrase it, because on the one hand, we talk about wanting to be together, but there are some people that can't. And so this is a way to continue programming in a way that's meaningful and keep people included, even if they can't be in the same physical space. So that's very interesting.
Absolutely. I hadn't considered that. I think it's a good learning, you know.
Well, ladies, I would love to hear your comfort films. If we could... transition to that. I want to hear about the stories that bring you up when times are down. So, Julie, let's start with you. What's your comfort film?
I couldn't narrow it down to one. This was such a tall task for me. You know, I was thinking about almost like genres and what I tend to gravitate towards when I'm looking for a pick-me-up. And I was thinking, you know, I really like musicals or sort of musically driven movies, Chicago, Hairspray, Dirty Dancing, all that kind of stuff. And then I'm like, you know what? I love Sex and the City. Maybe it's the Sex and the City movies. Some of my favorite ones from when I was younger, you know, Erin Brockovich and Legally Blonde and Selena and all that kind of stuff. But I was thinking more in more recent years, well, not recent years, but like as an adult, sort of movies that remind me of happy times and remind me of, you know, falling in love and things like that. And the two movies that are reminiscent of that for me are Garden State and Juno. Garden State. Yeah. Garden State was a movie that I saw, with my then boyfriend, and I knew that I was falling in love with him, and I loved Garden State so much. It's still one of my favorite movies. The acting is incredible. The story, cinematically, it's stunning. The soundtrack is incredible. And it actually introduced me to one of my favorite singers of all time, which is Imogen Heap, because Imogen Heap, with her then, I guess, band called Frou Frou, did the song Let Go for the Garden State soundtrack. And it just, every time I hear that song, it reminds me of that time in my life, and it reminds me of Garden State. And it's a really special film. I mean, it does deal with a bit of mental illness and heavier topics, but I just think it's a really brilliant piece by Zach Braff. And then when it comes to Juno, I really loved Juno in general, but my husband actually proposed to me by putting the ring in, he bought me Juno and put the ring in the DVD case. Oh. And that's sort of how he proposed to me. So, Juno again is like just, kind of a unique piece. It's got a great soundtrack. The acting is good. It's a unique story. And I just, those two films just remind me of that time in my life and of being happy. And so I think those are two that I feel like are definitely top of the list when it comes to comfort films for me.
Those are two great picks. It's interesting. They're not dissimilar. They're very different films, but I mean, they sort of that independent genre. So Garden State and Juno, like what do those films say to you that is such a comfort?
I think that, and perhaps it was because of the time in my life that I was in when I saw them, but both of them are sort of based around unique love stories and love stories that perhaps shouldn't have worked. The two main characters in Garden State were very different people from different backgrounds, and they met by chance. And they had a unique relationship. And, you know, even at the end of the movie, spoiler alert, when they meet back up in the airport, and literally the last thing that Zach Braff says to Natalie Portman is, "What do we do now?" Because they knew that they loved each other, and they knew that they wanted to be in each other's lives. But, you know, logistically, they needed to figure out how that would work for them. And I just... I really appreciated their chemistry. And Juno, it's the same thing. I mean, it's a teenage love story, so there's that. But it is based around a teenage pregnancy, and so, you know, obviously navigating that, I couldn't even imagine would be so difficult. And although it was a teenage love story, there was a lot of maturity, at least to Ellen Page's character Juno. And she was like a firecracker, and I sound so old when I say that. But her character was just so intriguing to me, and it's, they're both very emotionally driven movies. And then I think, and this is also a spoiler, I think back to when Juno had the baby and gave it away, and just sat there crying. And I remember crying with her. And even though, you know, at the time when I saw it, I hadn't had any children, I just remember crying because you could just feel the emotion. It was very well done.
Jolie, what about you? How do you relate to those films?
Great question. Actually, it's funny when you mentioned Juno, because I actually watched a Jason Reitman Diablo Cody film last night. I watched Young Adult, which I really enjoyed. I thought it was hilarious and smart and clever and just had a lot to say. And not unlike, actually, Garden State, I would say, in terms of the sort of homecoming and, you know, kind of reckoning with parts of yourself or pieces of your life that may be left behind or left unfinished or unprocessed. And also the sense of, I think, just kind of reckoning with yourself as well. You know, being able to address things or pain points within yourself, maybe pertaining to mistakes that the characters have made in their past or trauma that they've experienced. So I personally really enjoyed Young Adult. And I was thinking about that when you mentioned Juno, because again, both films are so clever, very, very well written, and just deal with such fascinating characters. And I definitely feel like with Juno and Garden State and perhaps even with Young Adult, there's sort of this coming of age theme there. And I mean, I'm sure I'm not alone in loving coming of age films, whether it be coming of age as a teenager or, you know, coming of age as an adult. I think that throughout, you know, it's just human nature. Like throughout your life, you go through rebirth in different ways, and you kind of just address different chapters of your life as well. So I think that that's kind of a theme, and I love films that kind of deal with those kind of coming of age stories and experiences. And I like how you also mentioned they are kind of very emotionally driven, dealing with, again, just all these kind of different characters coming from different places and being very different people. But ultimately, in the end of both films, Garden State and Juno, it seems that everyone kind of is happy or at least optimistic about the path that they're on individually and collectively, which is, I think, really hopeful, you know, in a way. It kind of gives you hope, both of those films.
Mm. Yeah, I like what you said about Garden State, and perhaps I did resonate with that. You know, I was a young adult, I suppose, when I saw Garden State, and Zach Braff's character coming home and really battling with past experiences and past traumas and trying to move on with his life as well, and then meeting somebody and, you know, balancing his previous drama with his future, you know, and what he's going to do with his future. So, yeah, I think as a young adult, I definitely felt that hit close to home, you know.
I think Garden State has a special place in a lot of people's hearts, because I think it was a movie that was, it stands the test of time, but I do think that it was such a very precise touchstone for a lot of people around that age, kind of like a 20 something at the time that film came out. Mm-hmm. I think it really had a very specific resonance for people that fell within that generation. Again, I think it stands the test of time, but I do think it hit home for a lot of people, especially people in that generation, for sure.
Brilliant piece by Zach Braff. He just, I can't even think of one flaw.
Wow, that's bold. See, I feel like I'm left out of the party on this one. I haven't seen it. And that I'm glad you said that, Jolie, because that is one of those movies that's sort of seen as a generational defining film for a lot of people.
Oh, that's exactly what I was trying to say, but you put it much more eloquently than I did.
That's why I'm the host. No, I'm kidding.
Hey, you're not wrong.
As I fumble through my words. But no, in all seriousness, though, that's one of those words. Like, that reminds me of, like, a Reality Bites for that early 90s Gen X film was, one of those films was Reality Bites, and Garden State was early 2000s, I think. But it was almost like a moment in time film, and it really captured a certain group of the population, captured their hearts. So it's one of those ones that I didn't see, I would like to see. I'm glad you mentioned it, because I'd forgotten about it, frankly. It's been so long since anybody's talked about it, but I know that it was one of those important ones at the time.
I see that it came out, it says, in 2004.
Yeah.
So you're early kind of 2000s.
So that's you know what that is that's like a millennial. That's right in that target age, because anywhere between 25 and 30 were the ones talking most about that. 25 and 35 were talking about that film at the time.
And you know what, that was Jim Parsons. Like, he had a small role in that film before he was Sheldon Cooper. Like, and he was so funny in it too. And I mean, even Method Man is in it.
Well, anything with Method Man has got to be good.
Oh yeah. now that's the test of time.
Method Man.
You know what I really appreciate about Garden State, which I think, like, as Steve so eloquently put, like a generation defining film, because absolutely that's the impression of Garden State that I have. I don't think I was exactly the target in terms of the characters in the film. Like, I'm not exactly the same age range as they are, so I watched the film actually much later. But I watched it, I watched it when I was in university, because I knew about that film, and I was actually sort of holding on to it. I sort of, when it came out, I told myself, you know what, I'm gonna hang on to this film, and I'm gonna watch it when I'm in my 20s. I know that sounds really weird, but I've done that for a few films where I'm like, okay, I really want to see it, but I'm gonna hold on to this one for a little while until I feel like I might kind of understand it better, or appreciate it more. So I watched it, I think, when I was in university. And one thing I really appreciated about Garden State, which I think did hit home for a lot of people, was how it addressed the main character. And I think it's Andrew, Zach Braff's character, addresses kind of some trauma that he has from his childhood that sort of led to a lot of shame, a lot of guilt, and a lot of sort of this inability to communicate with, or, you know, sort of a struggle to communicate with his family, I think with his father particularly. Mm-hmm. And I just feel like that resonated with a lot. Mm. Well, resonates with, I think, almost everyone, but certainly from that generation. I think, you know, when we saw Reality Bites, that was another kind of generation defining film, where we saw people kind of that age group being able to kind of tell their own story in a way that dealt with things that were kind of unique to their experience. I know Reality Bites, sort of the beginning of the film, there's a lot of sort of existential kind of anxiety and uncertainty and questioning, which is why these films like Reality Bites and Garden State stand the test of time, because, you know, I would argue that almost everyone of any generation deals with those themes, but in very, you know, ways that are unique to each generation and then further to each individual. And Reality Bites, that always stood out to me, the kind of this sort of anxiety or uncertainty about, you know, their financial stability and, you know, how they want to live their life. You know, they spend a lot of time talking about, oh, I don't want to live the life that my parents lived. I want to make real art and things like that. And then Garden State, kind of not a similar thing, but I think that Zach Braff's character, Andrew, kind of wrestles with, you know, wanting to kind of change the narrative and change the relationship that he has with his family, but also feeling not entirely supported and kind of stuck due to this cycle of shame and pain that he has. So I think that they're very unique to their generation, because again, it's people of that generation kind of telling their own story, but dealing with themes that I mean, I would argue that most people will experience at some point in their life.
Well, and it's interesting you say that too, because I hadn't thought of it that way. But if you want to backtrack it too, you could look at The Breakfast Club, in which I believe is 85, but I could be wrong.
I would look that up as well.
Let's look that up. But if you look at The Breakfast Club, again, which is about maybe if let's assume it's mid-80s, is about a 10-year gap. And there's about a 10-year gap between each of these films. All of them are very much about being heard. It's all about a generation trying to be heard in their own voice. I mean, certainly every generation has its stories that it clings to, but those are all films that were not massive blockbusters, but at the same time connected with a subsection of the population and felt like it was speaking for them.
Yeah.
Now I really got to watch Garden State.
Yes.
No, you're absolutely right. And you're also right about the date. You were spot on. It was 1985.
Yay, I know something. Well, I am the host. No, I'm kidding.
That should be your catchphrase.
That's my new catchphrase. Oh, no, don't tell me that because I will use it and beat it to death. Those are great picks. Great picks, Julie. Jolie, what about you? What's your comfort film? Or I'm not sure if you landed on a film.
Well, that is an excellent question. And thank you for allowing us to discuss our comfort films, because I think they are important to discuss. You know, they may not be the most critically acclaimed films, or maybe they are. But at the end of the day, they bring us some sort of solace or comfort or joy in a way. I found the question very difficult, and I wasn't able to land, I'm sorry, on one film. I kind of have five that that I'm like, okay, these ones are my go-to. And I actually cross-referenced with Sean. I was like, you know, if I had a comfort film, what would you say it was? And he's like, why are you asking me that it's your comfort film? I'm like, I'm curious. And he actually, he got three out of the five of them. So that's quite interesting. But yeah, so I kind of nailed it down to five. And one of them is a TV show, actually, which is weird because I'm really not a TV person per se. It's very rare that I stick with a show and watch it in its entirety. But this particular TV show is called Lovesick. It's a British show. It is on Netflix, if you're ever interested in watching it. It's three seasons long, which I absolutely am very upset about. I wish it was longer. I wish it was never ending. But currently there's three seasons. There's not been any announcement if there'll be more. And to be honest, the season three finale kind of ended in a way that I feel like they may have been kind of saying goodbye, which I hope I'm wrong. But yeah, it's a show called Lovesick. It centers on three best friends, and it kind of follows them through their lives. And it's super funny. It's super uplifting. I have rewatched this show a number of times, which again is very rare for me when it comes to TV shows. But these characters to me, even from the first time I watched the show, they just felt like friends. They're so well written, these characters. The chemistry is unbelievable. And then the core three, and then you have kind of sort of an outer or secondary layer of friends and characters in the show. And they're also so lovable and interesting. And, you know, they all are wonderful. They all make mistakes. They go through highs and lows. But every step of the way, to me, they feel like friends. When I want to feel comfort, if I just want to feel like a big hug from a friend, I'll watch Lovesick. And I have my favorite episodes, too, that I'll kind of always go back to. But to be honest, I could just pull a random episode and it'll bring a smile to my face in some way, shape, or form. So there's that one. Another kind of along that vein of, you know, a hug from a friend type of experience, I go to Some Like It Hot, starring Tony Curtis, Jack Lemmon, and Marilyn Monroe. That is one of my all-time favorite films, period. Like, outside of the scope of comfort films or not, just one of my all-time favorite films. I think it's so ahead of its time. I think it stands it stands up just as well today as it did back then. It's clever. It's witty. The characters, again, the chemistry is unbelievable. And I've watched it so many times that I can recite it almost line for line. But yeah, these characters, they just feel like friends to me at this point. I can put it on. And even though I've seen it a very, very unhealthy amount of times, I still laugh. I still find it funny. It never gets old. it'll always make you laugh. And yeah, it honestly gets better with every watch. These characters just feel more like friends each time. And even though you might know what's coming, it doesn't make it any less magical. So that's one for me. My others one is an entire series. It's the Harry Potter series. I read the books. I actually started reading the books when I was 11 years old. I started reading the books and I was basically the exact same age as the characters in the books. And I truly felt like I grew up with these characters. I read them all. It was sort of like every time a new book would come out, I was kind of at the corresponding age as the characters. So very, very interesting kind of occurrence there. I truly felt like I grew up with these characters. And when the movies came out, I was so excited because I already loved the book series. And yeah, the movies are just, you know, they're a lot of fun. They're obviously big budget kind of franchise films. But at the end of the day, just hearing that message of who you are is based on your choices. I forget the quote, but it's basically, you know, you're defined by the choices that you make, not just the abilities that you have. And basically the main character, Harry, as I'm sure everyone knows, he's kind of given so many choices throughout his life to kind of choose the path of good or bad, and he always tries to do the right thing. He may not be perfect. He does not pay attention in class a lot, which for me, being a very like annoying, keener, studious student, I could not relate to him in that way. But he always tries to do the right thing, and he always sticks up for others and for what he believes in. So for me, growing up with that was so embedded in my core. And even now as an adult, when I return to those films, I get a great, great feeling. It feels, again, like a homecoming, like I'm returning to a family or just a part of my life that I love and I cherish. My last two. I know, I'm sorry.
I'm going to just edit this out for the next 5 weeks then. Jolie will be on every.
It was a hard question.
It is.
One of them is Little Women.
The new one or the old one?
It would be, for me, it's both the 90s one and the recent, the 2019 release. They're handling the story. It's the same story, but handled in two very different ways. And I love them both. Again, I've seen them a very high number of times. I know many scenes off by heart. I love them so much. And yeah, I love all the characters. I love, especially in the 2019 version, Greta Gerwig gives weight and gives merit to each of the characters, as opposed to just focusing on, say, two particular characters. And I love that it shows all these different people in this family. And although they're different and they get in arguments and they want very different things and they're good at different things, you know, they still love each other and support each other, which again, it feels like a family when you watch this film. And last but not least, this might be a bit of an odd one, but kind of like Jules, how you mentioned hers are not necessarily the, I guess, obvious choice for a comfort film because they're not like these super bright, happy like films, but for me, Cloud Atlas is one of them. Aside from so I love Cloud Atlas. I do have an issue with the fact that you have white actors playing characters of color. Right. I think that could have been handled differently, and I think that could have been handled better. But if I want to obviously give that disclaimer because that is an issue, yes. A big issue with the movie. But the message of the story, to me, I, again, have seen it a number of times. I bawl my eyes out every time. And I have my certain scenes that I bawl my eyes out. I love it. I love that film. I love the message that it has. I love the trajectory. I'm not sure if you guys have seen it, but the trajectory of all the characters, but especially Tom Hanks' character. We kind of see this one soul live many, many different lives and how he kind of moves from being a soul that's really kind of wrapped itself in evil over these lifetimes learn and choose to do the right thing and to become better. And I love that. I love the idea that, you know, whether it's through multiple lifetimes or even hopefully in one lifetime, we can all choose to do the right thing and, you know, acknowledge our mistakes, but try to do better, and not for just for ourselves, but, you know, for those around us as well. And I love the messaging. Again, there's so many messages in that film, but how it talks about death and how it talks about one person's impacts within the world and within history. I personally just love it. And for me, I find that very comforting, I guess, because it doesn't shy away from death. It doesn't shy away from mortality. It doesn't shy away from people making bad choices or doing bad things. It doesn't shy away from all those things. But almost because of that, it sort of really brightens the reflection of, you know, life and the I guess how precious life is and how important the decisions that we make are and the impact that we have are.
That last one is a fascinating pick. Out of all the things that you said, I did not expect Cloud Atlas to be the one. I saw that at TIFF, and yes, of course, there absolutely that's problematic. That's a problem with the casting issues there. However, the thing that I respected about the film was its attempt, was its scope. I don't know if yes. I've ever seen a movie, maybe in Infinity War is a totally different type, but I don't think I've ever seen a movie with as big a scope as yeah. Cloud Atlas. It was incredibly ambitious. And, you know, I wouldn't say it was movie of the year by any stretch, but I did find that fascinating.
You're absolutely right. The scope of it, it's an epic. It's ambitious to its core. I mean, they're tackling ideas and they're tackling messages that, you know, are quite big and broad as it is. And to be able to convey those messages across through the scope of so many different characters, so many different lifetimes, and so many different places, past, present, and future. Yeah, it's super ambitious. And I myself, like I recognize myself that there are certain stories that just on a personal, I guess on a like a personal choice level, I love films that deal with, I call them kind of personal epics. Mm. It may not be an epic in the sense of, you know, the Odyssey or something like that, but just like a person's personal epic and the story of someone's life and the impact that it has, even if that impact is not necessarily as directly portrayed as it is in certain films, but yeah, I personally tend to really enjoy and am genuinely fascinated by stories like that. And so here you have Cloud Atlas that is literally a personal epic times 10 times a million different lifetimes. So, I mean, I was already intrigued. I didn't see it at TIFF. I feel like that would have been an incredible film to see on the big screen. But yeah, the first time I watched it, I watched it with Sean. I was riveted. Even though it is a long film, it's about 3 hours, if I remember correctly. I was riveted. And yeah, I just found it so interesting. And especially, again, when it discusses the notions of death and mortality and impact, those really resonated with me. And I really appreciated that. But yeah, you're right. When I think of that film, ambitious is a perfect word to describe it.
Yeah. Julie, have you seen any of the things that she, do you have any of the things she listed?
Sorry. But, any of the things on that long list?
I mean, I've seen most of the Harry Potter films, but no, I don't think I've actually seen any of the other movies that she mentioned. Crazy, right? I mean, it's giving me some good ideas of ones that I need to watch in my, you know, the remote watch sessions that I thought I would have lots of, but I don't have as much time as I thought I would.
That's the thing, I mean, with, like, Cloud Atlas is a long one. Like, it's an investment, and the beauty of Cloud Atlas, and again, kind of back to that note about it being so ambitious, is that there is not one scene in that film that doesn't refer to a different scene, really kind of tying into this notion of, you know, one person's choice impacting and having a ripple effect throughout their lifetime and potentially many, many other lifetimes. So it is a film that you definitely kind of want to watch it and be fully kind of aware and present. It's definitely not a film I would say that you could probably throw on and kind of, you know, be doing other things while you have it on. I mean, I've seen it a few times now, and even so, every single time I notice something that I didn't notice the previous time. But something like, I'm trying to think, like, there's definitely, like, Lovesick, the episodes are fairly quick. I think they're only, like, 25 to 30-minute episodes. So if you just wanted to watch one or two, it's not too time-intensive. Nice. And it's, oh, my gosh, I genuinely think if you were to watch it, you would really enjoy it. It's so much fun. And the characters, over time, they just become, like, friends. Or maybe I'm just weird and I want to be friends with TV characters.
Oh, well, me too.
Can you talk about that? That's a really, you said that a lot when you're describing it, is about your friends, you know, it feels like friends. Mm-hmm. What is it about that the feeling like friends, what is it about these characters that feel that way to you?
Well, first of all, I'm just very weird.
No, it seems like a normal feeling.
I mean, it differs. It differs for each one. I mean, in the case of Lovesick, I mean, in the case of all of them, I will say, like, off the top, the chemistry between the characters feels very real and it feels very organic. And certainly I felt that with Lovesick. You kind of have three characters. And although at first I'd say two of them might come across a bit archetypal in terms of their personalities as you watch the show, I don't know what it is. Their personalities really start to sink in and you get to kind of see them evolve and grow. And they just feel very organic and very real. I would say what I love about, I would say Lovesick, Little Women and Harry Potter in particular, and some like It Hot as well. The characters just have a love for each other. And I don't mean that in the sense of a romantic love per se. Mm-hmm. But they just genuinely have a deep care for each other. And I think that extends across, you know, the message of the film, across even the most, I would say, expositional of scenes, like even if it's a scene not necessarily about the relationships or the friendships, it always solidly comes across. And I like that each of those films kind of leaves room for this notion of people who are very different from one another, you know, still having a deep love and care and connection with each other and showing up for each other and doing the right thing. You know, just trying to have this, I think just showing up for each other and just trying to have this sense of community with each other. And that really comes across, I would say, especially in like some like Hot, Harry Potter, Little Women, Lovesick. Although they all have a lot of comedy and there's a lot of laughs and a lot of, in Harry Potter's case, a lot of obviously like fantasy and action and adventure. At the end of the day, the kind of the lifeblood of all these films is the connection between the main characters and the kind of sense of community that it provides. And as a viewer, you kind of feel so embedded in that community. Mm. So I think that's what I feel. Unless guys, I'm just really weird.
I
don't know
what to tell you. I'm more surprised that in the midst of that list, with you describing it that way, you didn't say Friends.
Okay, you know what? I actually never really watched Friends.
What?
It's really weird. I've only seen Friends when I'm like, waiting for an appointment and Friends is playing on the TV in the waiting room. Like that's the only time that I've ever watched Friends. I've actually never sat down and watched it for fun or watched a whole episode. It's a big TV. Again, I'm not really a TV person. So I've never really immersed myself in Friends. I've never really immersed myself in Seinfeld. Some other big ones like How I Met Your Mother was really big, or at least when I was in high school, that and Grey's Anatomy was really big. I've not seen a full episode of any of those shows. So yeah, when it comes to TV, I'm not as knowledgeable. But when it comes to films, that's more my jam. But I really appreciate that through this conversation, that's something that I've noticed with a lot of the films, that really kind of at the core of these films is this sense of community between the characters and how they kind of consistently show up for each other. And again, there's no denying that they have ups and downs. Certainly in Some Like It Hot, they have the two main characters played by Tony Curtis and Jack Lemmon sort of have this love-hate friendship with each other. But at the end of the day, they whatever they do, you know, come hell or high water, they do it together. So there is definitely a strong sense of community I see in these films now, which I didn't notice before. So thank you for bringing that to my attention.
Well, you're not alone, though. I haven't seen Friends or Seinfeld or How I Met Your Mother either. I mean, I've seen episodes here and there, but no, I've never sat down and watched the whole shebang.
Julie, yeah. Ezekiel Levesque, we are going to have a conversation after this.
And I would classify myself as a TV person. Like, I do really like watching TV series, but I guess just that wasn't my vibe at the time that they were out on, you know. I know. I'm sorry.
It's okay. We can start a group, a club for people that haven't seen very popular TV shows.
You can't. And like you just said, I should watch it, Steve, or you said, you know, we need to sit down and, but I don't want to.
You know what? I'm so glad that you said that, Jules, because so many people have a big reaction when I say, oh, I've never really seen Friends. Like, you know, I've seen bits and pieces of it here and there, but again, I've never actually sat down to really watch it. And the reactions I get are like, people are just appalled. But yeah. Rightfully or wrongfully, I just don't really have a huge drive to see it. I mean, I've seen clips of it, and from the clips, I'm not it doesn't call to me very strongly. Same with the other shows that I mentioned. You know, I can definitely appreciate people's love for them, and I would never be like, oh, that old thing. But they don't call to me, I guess, for now anyways.
Yeah, that's the same thing with me. Like, I have absolutely nothing against any of them. I've seen some of the episodes before, and it's fine. Like, it was good. I liked it. But it's just something about it. Like, I didn't hop on the bandwagon when it was fresh. So, you know, going back to it now, I'm not really, it's not really like on my list. You know what I mean? There are so many other TV series and movies that I really am excited to watch that wouldn't be my first priority, I guess.
Can we say then officially that you girls are starting your own podcast called We're Not Friends? And
we're never going to be invited back to this one.
Oh my god, I love the title.
You will be when we're doing the Friends retrospective. Come on. moving on.
You sound so disappointed in us, Steve.
All right. Anyway, I would say this week for my comfort film, for me, it's easier to narrow it down to one because I get a chance to do it every week, is one that still I always feel like is going to disappoint me. And it always is a comfort to me. And that is 1994 Best Picture winner, Forrest Gump. Now listen, all right? This film, every time I put it on, I think this is going to be the lamest film. I don't know why. How did I ever enjoy it? And then about 10 minutes into it, I'm going, run, Forrest, run! What's just... Why? Jenny, why do you treat him this way? But it's not because of that... It's not even because of the character that I find the film a comfort. I can't say that. I mean, you know, I really would like to see them make a sequel, and I would like to see it because they only brought it up to the 80s, and I would love to see this continue on to today, because the thing that is a comfort to me about Forrest Gump is the feather. The whole film, he's the feather. Like, it is, there is this beautiful chaos throughout the way that they treat history. And this idea that he's floating through some of the darkest moments in American history in the last century and constantly watching it and yet constantly ends up okay. And at the time, I mean, this was like 26 years ago now, the special effects of having him show up in newsreels and that so effectively was remarkable. Like, this was like just outstanding special effects. The fact that he is this sort of constant throughout history, and, you know, there are sure little jokes here and there of things that he has done that change history or set things in motion, but really the whole point of this film is that essentially, as the posters say, Gump happens, but at the end we're still going to be all right. And that to me is the comfort. You know, I mean, yes, I love Tom Hanks. You know, one of my best friends always makes fun of me that I have my go-to actors and directors, and he's one of them. But there's something about this particular film, and no, maybe it shouldn't have won Best Picture, and yes, I know that year had Shawshank, and I know it had Pulp Fiction and whatnot, but there's something about that film that I think is such a comfort simply because it reminds us that we're going to get through this. And to me, that's why Forrest Gump is my comfort film. Pick it apart if you want.
No, not at all. If that has a place in your heart and your mind and your soul, then well, I mean, never.
Listen, you haven't watched Friends. No, I'm kidding.
That's funny. I mean, you know what? Forrest Gump obviously was an incredible movie, but it did become sort of a meme-worthy thing, right? I mean, even right to this day, you know, we'll be like, run. It just happens. It just comes out. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it's it's hard to describe. I mean, it's strange though that it was such an incredible movie and it won awards and it still resonates, but it is sort of made to be a joke. And I'm not quite sure, you know, where that line was crossed. I think maybe just because it's unique, you know, Forrest Gump was such a unique character and, you know, he was simple and, he had a very interesting accent, and that's just easy for some people to be, I don't know, to use it in a joke. It's hard to describe.
Well, and it's one of those films too, like I said, that people blame it for a lot of things. Like, it, you know, people say it shouldn't have won Best Picture, and they're probably right when you look back at the films that mattered in the moment. But I don't think that's a flaw of Forrest Gump. It's a testament to the films that were nominated for Best Picture in 1994. And you're right. Like, he's got one of those voices, like, almost Napoleon Dynamite quote worthy. Like, you have to not just try and say the line. You have to say it in his voice.
Yes.
Laugh is like a box of chocolates. Like, it's not like...
Well done.
Yeah, thank you. But so, I mean, in that sense, but and the film is flawed, but there is such an interesting look at the way that we interact with history in that film that's what keeps it around on my playlist, if you will.
I like how you mentioned this sort of theme of Forrest kind of being this feather that drifts throughout history, and we see him embedded in all these, you know, major historical events, and yet he comes out okay every time. And there is something, you know, truly, truly so, I guess, hopeful or reassuring about that. And I actually really find Jenny's character fascinating in those films as well.
Yes. Too,
because, yeah, I was always really kind of transfixed by her character because, you know, we obviously see her childhood being, you know, incredibly abusive and traumatic, and the journey that she takes as well. You know, Forrest kind of goes throughout history, not unscathed, but he comes out almost, again, every kind of major historical event, he comes out okay. Whereas Jenny, I think, has a very kind of human journey of, you know, this, you know, horrific childhood abuse and trauma, and then her journey through life trying to essentially escape that and kind of find herself or find family and communities. And, you know, and with these partners who, again, kind of replicate the abuse that she experienced when she was a child, and then again, kind of coming home to Forrest, to, you know, the homestead that he grew up on, which she spent a lot of time. And ultimately, we feel that I find her journey actually reassuring as well, even though it goes to some very dark and very traumatic places. I think almost because of that, and seeing how she's still able to have a beautiful life and to have love and to, you know, ultimately feel fulfilled and happy at the end of her life. To me, I found that actually, I don't know, that always kind of stuck with me. But certainly, I mean, Forrest Gump, like Tom Hanks, he's Tom Hanks. Like, love Tom Hanks. You can't, he lights up the screen no matter, you know, what role he's in. He's such an incredible actor. And in this film, you know, there is something very, you know, it deals with a lot of heavy topics as you listed, Steve. And yet it feels very buoyant. Like, you kind of go through this film, you don't really feel weighed down by it at any time. You really just want the best for him and Jenny. You want to see them succeed and you want to see them happy. This is definitely a film that I think falls under that umbrella of like personal epic for both of those characters. Just seeing the journey that they take. Yeah, there is definitely something really reassuring about this film.
Well, you know, I'm glad you brought up Jenny, because Jenny is easy to hate in the sense that you love Forrest. But the truth is, Forrest may be the film's conscience, but Jenny is actually its soul. And now I think we're in a time where I think more people will, watching the film, probably resonate more with Jenny than they do with Forrest. And Forrest may be the one that comes out okay, but Jenny does not. Jenny is the one who represents the lost soul in the midst of all this chaos. It's not that, hey, you know, everything's going to be fine, because that's what you get through Forrest. But with Jenny, there's this damage, there's this mark that's left on the culture because of all of these things. That she is, her character is so necessary to be continued to tied to Forrest, because they're both true. There are some people that sort of floated through it and wondered what was going on, and there were some people that bore the weight of it, like that tore their soul out. And so there is a genuine appreciation that I have now for her character, because of what she goes through. And the only reason that people dislike her would be because of how she treats Forrest. But the truth is, she's almost more important to the film than he is. So it's really, to me, this is a comfort film, because there still is, like you talk about it being buoyant. It is buoyant because it's told through his eyes, but that does not take away from the damage that's actually going on at the same time. So it may end well, but that also doesn't shy away from the fact that, like you said, takes you to some quite dark places, and I appreciate that about the film.
I feel like if Forrest is the feather, or almost like the sort of angelic figure that moves throughout history, Jenny's journey, again, is just very human. And I love how you put that, you know, about her sort of being representative of the people who, you know, kind of bore the weight of all these times, or bore sort of the darker side of history. And I mean, at the end of the film, you know, she, or at least if I'm remembering correctly, because it's been a while since I've seen the film, but if I remember correctly, like, she also kind of does have a good life, like, you know, obviously she has a life that is truly marked by abuse and by trauma. But towards the end, you know, we see her happy. We see her character happy. And, you know, I remember, you know, again, seeing her towards the end, like she has, she's got a job, she's got, you know, a friend, she obviously reconnects with Forrest and they have a son. But she genuinely seems happy at the end. Yeah. And I find that so, I guess, I don't know. There's like a big sense of almost relief there that we witness her going through this journey, and you know, we want her to be okay. And yeah. Ultimately it seems that she is happy and fulfilled. Which I personally find like it's almost like a relief and kind of a reassurance to see that she is okay. You know, she's been through so much, and yet she does also get fulfillment and happiness in her life as well.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. So there is my comfort film, that and Friends. And ladies, thank you so, so much. We could probably go on for much later, but I think we should transition out. Thank you so, so much for coming on and chatting. You know that I love it when you both come on. So thank you so much again.
Thank you so much for having us. This was awesome. It was a different format, but very, very cool to hear all your different movies.
Yeah.
Thank you for having me back on too. It was wonderful. And I loved hearing the films that you guys hold in your heart. And I love and appreciate you giving me time to take you through my long list of films.
No, it was great. And, you know that I love chatting with you both. So thank you. And, for you at home, we will be back next week with another episode of Comfort Films. We will not be going, this is not the permanent format, we will not be going on forever, but I expect to be going through June on this as well, as we continue to bridge between the disappearance of films on screen and whatnot, and it's been a lot of fun as well. So thank you, ladies, again, and for you at home, stay safe and stay comfortable.